You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/CivCast. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of CivCast. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here by my co-host, Wouter. Hello, Wouter.
Hey, Kyle, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. We're at episode 49, Wouter, one episode away from the big 50 mark. Are you excited?
Yeah, I actually am. We're doing a really good job of actually keeping the show going. It's we have so many topics still to discuss. I think we can go for the 100 without much of a problem.
Yeah, and there's going to be confetti and fireworks and all the other things. So
I'm going to keep you to that one, actually.
Please do.
So I expect that. Yeah.
Get ready. It's going to be a real spectacle, everybody. Tune in live. So this week, we thought we would touch on a couple cool things because we got some great feedback. So we're going to be going through some thoughts that were posted on the subreddit in relation to our last episode. A great idea someone posted about how the agenda system feels a little lacking. I think we talked around that last week here and there, saying that some of the games felt flat. And then they went and used that word. And I was like, I think you get it. We're going to recap the CivCast challenge. And then you've got something interesting to talk to us about tutorials. So very, very excited overall. This is going to be a great little episode. Just kind of the theorizing about all things Civ and where things could go, more improvements. It is, I think it's like 'tis the season that we want an update, like a bigger one. And that's kind of what it seems like we're getting on the subreddit is people saying, I need this thing completely rehauled. I've dealt with it for a year and this system now is like boring. I need a new adjustment to it.
I mean, it's almost full, so the full patch should be coming eventually.
With a new leader, hopefully.
No, it actually is officially fall already now.
It is.
It?
I think it changed it like 2 days ago or something like that. Maybe
yeah,
three.
Exactly. So we are in fall. So the fall patch should be coming, I mean, in the coming 3 months, I expect.
I expect it day one of the fall season, Wouter. Anything less than that is unacceptable.
Then they're already late by your definition, right?
They are. I'm kidding. They can have some time. They've been doing really, really well with these patches. So quality over quantity, I guess. There's a balance in there, actually. Quantity equal to quality. So, something there. Would you like to start us off by reading off the CivCast challenge and reminding people what they're going to do? They only have until this upcoming Saturday to get their final game scores in. Because Saturday the 30th is when we close up shop for the CivCast challenge for September, and then we recap it next Sunday, which will be the 1st of October. Take it away.
October already.
I know.
But yeah, of course, because this CivCast challenge, we're doing something a little bit different than before. We are all playing on the same seed. You're playing as Cyrus, and your opponents will be France, Germany, India, Sumeria, and Greece as Gorgo. And it's going to be normal size map, or the small type, the default type for Civilization VI. Everything is on standard. You can do any victory type that you want, and the difficulty will be Emperor. But the big point is, of course, the game random seed and the map random seed are provided by us so that everybody plays the exact same game, pretty much. That's the big part. For the seeds, you can go to our Reddit page, and in this month's challenge page, the seeds will be listed. I've also marked a comment there with a settings that you can download and load in, and a first turn save with both CQUI on and off. So you can just download that and start playing from turn one as well. I haven't done anything, so you're all on your own. I'm really curious what people are going to make out of it. So far, we have seen a lot of people playing already, and I'm really happy with that. And maybe we can score a couple of more.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of activity on the CivCast challenge already. I mean, there's at least like 34 comments going on there for that subreddit sticky. And that's always a great sign. That's how we know that when it comes around, it's going to be a tight race, a lot of different opinions. I can't wait to kind of see all of these in their full glory because there's going to be some cool battles. Again, apologies to everyone that kind of got caught in that weird patch limbo that we had where Mac users were stuck behind. you know, the powers that be got us that time. But for everyone that's continued and restarted and all that stuff, that you're now on the same playing field, thank you very much. We appreciate you sticking with the Civcast Challenge. We're going to have something cool for you next month. Valter and I have already been putting our heads together a little bit early. We did it after last week's episode. So we have something very... very fun in mind. You're going to need to pick up your...
I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, pick up your sword and shield at your local store because you're going to need it.
You actually going to play this Civcast Challenge as well, Kyle? Or
maybe.
Or you don't have much time?
I'm awful at getting around to Civcast Challenges. Like, I'm really bad. And last one I played, I got my butt so kicked that I was just like, I can't. I give up. I surrender.
I've seen you've been streaming a lot, so maybe a live stream that people can watch.
Very possibly. You know what? Can I talk about this for a second? It's very tangential. But I noticed this, though, because it was semi-research. Civ 6 does not perform well at all on Twitch, for example. Like, they rank significantly lower than Civ 5, if at all, in view count. Which, community, I'm actually curious. Are you people that watch, do you watch other people play Civ on I almost said Reddit. I'm looking at Reddit. But are you someone that watches people play Civ 6 on Twitch? Like, what happened there that they can't rank in as high as Civ 5? And for example, the numbers I was looking at, some of the metrics I was looking at the one night when I did this research was Civ 5 had about 500 viewers total between, you know, all the streams that were running, about 500 viewers were watching. Civ 6, significantly lower at about 150. So something
there. I think
there...
a lot of streamers as well don't really want to stream Civ 6 anymore. I noticed that at the beginning when I started streaming Civ 6 instead of Civ 5, I had a drop as well, which eventually picked up when I started doing the deity challenge thing, because people found that interesting actually to watch. And there was so little competition of other people playing Civ 6. I think it is not only that people don't want to watch it as much, but also there's just a lot less quality players that are actually playing it.
That makes sense. I would hardly call myself a quality player to be in that category of people.
Quality is not only as in being the best in the game.
Uh-huh.
It's also like providing general stream quality, which I know you can do.
Oh, no, I don't know what you're talking about. it's an interesting concept. I've tried it a couple times in the past. I think I tried to stream the last Civcast challenge, and I had some of our community turn out. But at the same time, it's kind of like it tapers off. I don't know. It doesn't seem like Civ 6 has the demand for it there, for, like you're saying, whatever reason. You know, if the other streamers have gone back to doing Civ 5 or something like that, but. It is something I would absolutely love to do, the older ones. Like we've said, for the Patreon thing, we were going to go back and do those live stream because those would be fun. Those are things that people don't commonly dive into. And maybe that's part of the issue is Civ 6 is such an accessible game on basically any sort of computer that you have. Like, as long as it's semi-modern, you can play it. You can play Civ on a Mac. You can, you know, do all of that stuff. Whereas... what's a trending game right now that's big and people can't play on things? I don't know, whatever. A Destiny 2.
PUBG or something like that?
Yeah,
PUBG.
Something like that. You can't play it on every computer, so I think it gets way more eyeballs for the people that are mobile or, you know, just trapped with a bad computer at the moment. But Civ 6, everyone can play, so maybe they're in their own games, not really watching it. Who knows?
Yeah.
We're a different community.
I play the game and watch it or... play the game and listen to this podcast before I was on and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Interesting.
I like to dual box.
Yeah, that makes sense. Hey, we hear a lot of that, actually. We have a lot of people. And that's good because that means, and I'm just kind of talking around stuff, but this is kind of fun community update sort of stuff. But I got into video game podcasts in the past by doing the same thing, like listening to a podcast while I played a game. And we got a really nice message from someone saying that they do the same with us, have Civ open and listen to our show in the background. So that was really cool. I was like, hooray, it's come full circle. We're providing the content that I want to provide.
But yeah, I think we're doing well.
Without further ado, though, Valter, let's give people some real content, less bluster And let's do a follow up on last week's episode, because last week we talked about a lot of really cool things. We went in depth on trade routes, talking about how they affect people in both reality and how there's a lack of realism in the game. You know, to the point that you don't even need a physical trade route between two nations to trade them iron or something like that. And I think a lot of people like that. We had someone, a good community member, Dash Rip. He's always don't want to generalize. Is on our subreddit, always commenting on stuff. So Dash Rip writes, "You guys really covered a lot in this episode, and it was really interesting. Makes me think it wouldn't be too hard for them to implement bonuses for units, maybe not as customizable as you want." Also, we went into saying how we could get a more customized, nuanced feel for units in the larger game. I apologize. But he goes back and says, "But for say example, after you deal a total of X amount of damage to cavalry and with ranged units, you gain a small amount of bonus for the rest of the game. So that's kind of a cool idea. So as you deal X amount of damage with a certain unit type, you receive a certain amount of damage for the rest of the game. That's kind of cool. That's like kind of finding that chink in their armor sort of thing, and your units grow from doing so."
Also, I mean, it makes sense, right? Like you had in real life, that when knights became a general thing in European battlefields, that they started inventing the so-called Bodkin arrow, who could penetrate the plate shields and stuff like that.
That's a great point. I mean, that's very true. You know, as soon as we come up with a way to defeat, you know, something rolls onto the field for the first time, and it's very, I'll think like the tank and the idea of the tank in World War One. Okay, not the best tanks ever, but still, you know, something mechanized that rolls onto the field. You're not prepared for that, where you've been doing this whole other type of warfare, and it really throws a wrench into the whole system. And then you have to learn how to combat that. So, total sense. Let's see. So, rest of the game, that way it's impactful, but not overly complicated. Something to also mention is that the console version of Civilization Revolution units' appearance did actually change based on the first promotion they received. If you picked Medic, they got little health packs. Ninja gave them black outfits, stuff like that. Okay.
I love
that's
that.
Pretty crazy. Is Civilization Revolution, is that the one that people like, Valter, or is that the one that people thought was weird?
It's generally not that much liked.
Okay, I thought that was
I bought it when it came out for my Xbox 360 back in the day. I played it quite a bunch, but it's a lot more simpler version of Civilization, and therefore it's not completely my game. But I think these days it's on iPad and stuff like that, and you can pick it up for a couple of bucks, and it's an interesting way of playing Civ on the road. It's very doable.
Civ on the road. That's actually been something that we've had a lot of people request in the past, is though I just called Civ 6... what I say, it's like very accessible, but we've also had people asking for more accessible versions of it. So seems like there is a demand for that across the board.
I still want Civ 4 and iPads and stuff like that. I think they can run it.
I don't know why that's not a thing. I'd be all for it. Something else I'd like to see would be legacy bonuses for the policy cards. So this is something else Dash Rip was saying. This is a good topic here. So he says, would like to see legacy bonuses for policy cards. Say you keep one in for a length of time, you get a small related bonus to having that. It would further help strengthen your current playstyle. Always have the 50% bonus to range unit production. You gain a small range damage boost. Have the bonus gold on trade routes. Your trade routes get extra distance. So that's pretty cool. I really like that idea. So we're saying right now, policy cards feel very... disjointed with the rest of the game, because you can throw them in and toss them out at the same time. Makes sense in the idea that you can change your government over time, but it is so rapid and has so little impact that it really doesn't feel like it sends any ripple effects. What's your thoughts on this, Valter? This would actually give it those ripple
effects. I 100% agree. I mean, right now I use the tactic, I build a bunch of workers when I know that a civic is coming up to be completed. I stop them so that in every city there's just one turn left, just switch production to something else. Then when the civic is completed, I put in the policy card that your builders get extra charges. And then after that, the next civic immediately goes out again, just so I can maximize that bonus. But this way, you are so much more inclined to keep having that card in there, and especially if you swap it out, that you not reset the legacy bonus, but the ticking up towards getting a next point in that legacy bonus or something like that, that would make a lot of sense, and it would actually help a lot with the complaints that we've had before that it's so willy-nilly what you can do with these policy cards. I want to do international trade stuff right now, and next turn, oh yeah, no, I'm just going to switch to completely something different. It's just not that, it doesn't make real sense. You don't willy-nilly switch out all those kinds of policies as a government that quickly.
Right.
And this would actually help that so much. I really love the examples that were given as well, especially the extra distance on trade routes. It's so good for, like, because if you give extra gold, that it's too powerful probably, but the extra distance, that's the perfect level of what kind of bonus you would want to get out of these kind of cards. It's a small advantage, but in the long run, it can make actually a big difference to the game.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true. It makes a big difference to the game, and it just changes your... it gives you that feel of look what I've done and look how it's helping me going forward. And I think that's really important. I think we need more of that. We've said this a million times with those policy cards. They just feel so, like you said, you just don't whip out policies in real life and throw in new ones every 5 turns, 8 turns, whatever it takes. But this would give it something that feels a little bit more valuable to, I think, the player. Dashrip also commented on global warming, saying global warming would be a good introduction with the World Congress. So sounds like it would fit in that patch, is what he's saying, or that expansion, as it is a worldwide issue. But I would really hate natural disasters. In a game like Civ, throwing RNG into it can really annoy me, as then I feel cheated out of a win just due to the luck of the dice. Thanks for the episode. A lot of fun. Dashrip, thank you so much for all the great ideas across the board. I wrote back right away and I said, I completely agree about the natural disasters, and that is why I think that there should be an on-off button for it. Because some people would like it for the randomness that it would throw in. Like, I would enjoy it. Like, whatever, if my civilization gets hit with a volcano, so be it. We shouldn't have settled there or something. But I think it would dynamically change the landscape of how a game is done. And though I understand it would irk people mechanics-wise, boy, I would love to see it. Falter?
I mean, it keeps reminding me of this interview that I once read with Sid Meier. I probably have brought it up before, where he said, like, he wanted civilization to be like the rise and the fall of your empire, where you rise up, you have like a fall down of your empire, you start to decline, and then make the way back up. But he very clearly stated, like, this is not how people want to play. People don't want bad things to happen to their empire. If you have any RNG or something like that, that makes a bad thing happen, people tend to reload. The same way as, like, they had the reload button first, not in Civ 6, for, like, when you start a game, you can't immediately reroll for a new map and stuff like that, so you have the perfect map that you want to play with. It's people really, really wanted that back, and that really shows how much they're like, yeah, I don't like RNG, I want things to be set up good, and I want to win. And if things go bad, then I will just reload my last save and just do it better. So, yeah, I get what he's saying. Personally, I would love it, and I think an on-off button would be great. And if it exists, it should be automatically turned off, probably.
Yeah.
But I would love to have events in the game. Not only negative events like natural disasters, but also positive events.
Sure. Well, do you have any positive events in mind that you're thinking of? Anything like that?
From the top of my head, a very small chance if you have a mine on a hill that you find iron, for example.
Oh, that's interesting. So you could, you're just making a regular mine, no strategic resource when you plant it down, but yeah. Yet you could find
it. So just
it.
A mine on a hill or something like that, that has
that's a cool
like
one.
No other bonus like than the production it gives you. You usually have those in your empire. And with a very small chance, sometimes it can just pop up like, yo, we did an amazing discovery. We found a shit ton of iron here.
I like that. That's a pretty cool one. Wow, that's a great idea, Valter. You could that'd really help you out across the board if you had it happen. Small chance, but it would benefit you for sure. So yeah
exactly. In those kinds of ways, those kinds of events, and you could of course have events with less significance, but are still in there that are both positive and negative. For example, you could have something like there was a really good like. A sermon and the whole town was rallied with religious fever. You gain 20 extra faith in this turn or something like that. Or the opposite, there were religious rebellions, like supporters from both sides started fighting each other, and you lose 20 faith, something like that.
Right.
It's relatively minor, but it does give a lot of flavor to your game.
Oh, for sure. That sounds like it would. I'm definitely a fan. I know, I guess, per that interview, you're right. People don't like that RNG aspect of it. And I guess I don't even really think of it that way. I don't know. Let's see. I guess Beyond Earth felt like it had a lot of RNG in it. And that probably goes into why people didn't like that game very much, because there was so much randomness to what was happening in the world. I like that because I still have better stories from Beyond Earth than I do for Civ 6, just due to that RNG, in my opinion, because there were times that a satellite would randomly crash near my place, and that really helped me, and blah, blah, blah. I think I like my RNG in Civ, is what I'm kind of coming to the conclusion of right now. I mean, sure, it would be devastating when a massive hurricane hits your city that you put on the coast, but that's the point of it. But you're right. I mean, if people aren't going to play that way, I can't expect Firaxis to design their games around something that would be against their player base. At the same time,
I mean, the thing is, it will not only happen to you. The AI will also suffer from these events and stuff like that. So in all, it will be balanced. I do get that for example, you shouldn't all of a sudden have a hurricane if you guys have been living there for thousands of years.
Right.
You shouldn't like all of a sudden hurricanes appear. We never know this was a hurricane prone area or something like that. You should have a little bit of knowledge of something like that it could happen, so that you don't make that your most important city, that in where you have your spaceport, one turn away of winning the space victory, and hurricane hits and you're done for, something like that.
Are you making? Are you pointing jokes at Florida and the fact that our space station, space center, is there?
I didn't actually know the space center was there. I knew. Oh, actually,
NASA,
I should have known.
NASA's like, in
Houston,
Florida.
We
yeah?
have a problem. It was not pointed at that. But
my space
and the same goes for like earthquakes and stuff like that. You should not have like all of a sudden we've lived here for so long, but all of a sudden we have earthquakes now and just one, and then for another 1,000 years everything will be fine. There should be at least something that makes you aware of that this could happen.
Yeah, how about that? So here's how I picture a volcano sort of situation. So you have a mountain. Maybe there is a tooltip that's over it, like a little warning bubble sort of thing, much like we get with natural wonders. But this one might have a little bit more information and say something like, this area is notorious for being a volcano area. You settle here at your own, you know, at your own dismay, whatever the word they want to use, but settle here at your own risk. It may explode, or this volcano has also, you know, gone dormant for many hundreds of years. And because that's how we do things in real life. I mean, people settle near volcanoes with the risk that it, you know, isn't going to hit them. And the same with earthquakes, too. I mean, to your point, I think that tooltip would kind of be the warning factor, because we settle on fault lines all the time. I mean, I'm living over a whole new fault line right now that just had an earthquake last week. And it's like, you know, people settle on them not knowing. And I agree. Well, I don't know. So I agree and I don't.
Well, actually, people really settled on them back in the old days before they actually knew what was actually happening, what a fault line was.
Right.
Because in those places, minerals are rarely keen to come out of the ground easily because it's so easily shaken up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Stuff get pushed up. And because of that, it was a really good place for living there. And they didn't know it was because of earthquakes were prone to that area, for example. So
here's
So
the thing I guess I wouldn't say, and I'm just, this is all speculation here, but so with your idea, though, I like it where it's, you'd say, you know, oh, you don't just have earthquakes after thousands of years. But maybe you kind of would. Like, I'm all for a warning tooltip so the players that don't want to deal with it can stay away. But at the same time, it would make sense, like, right? And if you're doing something where it's like, hey, this could happen soon, or it may never happen in this game. But if you settle here, look at all the resources that are around, and maybe you make that area really resource rich, tempting people.
Yeah,
it'd be
sense.
A risk, right? Like, great looking area, very tempting rewards. But if I settle here, in 500 years in game, or never in game, it might happen. The big one might hit and we might sink into the ground. But then again, if it's a fault line sort of situation, your neighbors may also be very affected by it as well. You can see Cleopatra's cities crumbling into the sands. Why did that image come into my head? Maybe because she's my most unfriendly neighbor I've ever had.
New fault lines and stuff like that could also start appearing. Like, you have had a city that was safe for many, many, many thousands of years, for example, and all of a sudden in the 1800s of the game, because of tectonic movement, all of a sudden this is now also a dangerous area.
I would like that. I could totally get behind this. As we flesh this out, people at home are probably cringing and like throwing their phone. Still, I really like this idea because it would give you a lot of variety and you would get stories from this. You would get stories. You know, I went so long and got so many resources, blah, 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 and then my city collapsed into the ground because a huge, huge fault line was there and X, Y, and Z. But also we talked about how, with the World Congress, people could potentially send aid to your cities, furthering your friendship. I mean, that would be really cool.
Yeah, one of the World Congress policies could literally be like a natural disaster fund or something like that. So when somebody gets hit by a natural disaster, everybody has to like give them some cash to help with the relief fund.
That would be cool. I'm so on board, Valtteri. Can someone get us a direct line to Firaxis? We have an important topic to discuss. It's very important.
Yeah, we should be game designers at Firaxis right now.
When you say designer, does it mean idea man that throws things at the wall and see how they
pretty
stick?
Much.
Okay, good.
You make design documents of like what you want to have in the game and other people shoot it down and then you revise it and then eventually say, fine, let's do it anyway.
Okay, so we're basically idea men and I like that because if it's anything a little more hands-on, I think you're pointing at the wrong guy. Just leave me outside. It's okay. But I think that's about all I have on that one, Valtteri, before we hop into your main topic for the week. Anything else you wanted to say on,
I think I've said everything about this.
Well, I think we could probably make a whole thing later down the line to talk a little bit more about legacy bonuses for policy cards. That could be an interesting thing. Let's maybe come back to that in the future. And everyone else that's listening, chime in and let us know your thoughts on all three of those things. Dash Rips posts up there. This is from last week's episode. That's CivCast 48. So that's on the subreddit. And chime in. Share your thoughts because those are some really, really rich subject matters that we could dive into. But Valtteri, I'm going to pass this to you. Tell me all about your experience with the tutorial and how you even got into turning that blasted thing on this week.
So I had a friend stay over and she knew I was doing this podcast and she was interested in playing Civilizations before she had played Total War, stuff like that. But she always missed like, I wanted to have like this kind of game where I don't have to go to war. I want to be diplomatic and be friends with everybody and just... can I do cultural victory? And not long before that, we actually played the Civilization board game as well. And so we decided, let's go and try play this game and see what we can make out of it. And of course, because she was new to the complete series, I said, let's start with a tutorial and see how that goes. So we did. And I, of course, know quite a lot about the game. And unfortunately, I was not that happy with the tutorial. It was actually, well, I hesitate to say bad, but it's really close to say to being actually not that good. Pretty much bad. I mean, there are bugs in it. Things haven't updated well with the patches and stuff like that. And it was just, I had to cringe every now and then by the over-dramatization that they put into it as well. It was just almost sad.
Oh, there's dramatized moments in the tutorial?
No, well, you have like this advisor who is fully voiced, which is cool, but like the text that she has to say is like so much more dramatic than it has to be. It's almost like you're running a soap all of a sudden, where you have to do certain things, and she over-explains it a bit. And then after that, after we finish with the tutorial, which is relatively simple, you play on a dual map, and you can choose either Cleopatra or Sumeria. After that, when you start a full game, you get the option, are you new to Civ in general or just Civ 6? There's no option for, I don't want to have any advisor. And I actually looked in the option menu and everything like that to turn it off. But I have advisors disabled, but still here, every time there was something happening, she popped up again like, oh, look, we have attracted a great writer to our civilization. We can now do these kinds of things because we are so awesome and she wants to share all her book knowledge with us. And the worst part was every time you loaded a save, all those pop-ups got reset.
I have so many thoughts for this, Valter. First of all, when you said tutorial, I wasn't exactly certain. Ignorant moment here. I didn't even realize really that Civ 6 had a full-blown tutorial, like actual scenario-based tutorial in the game.
Where you play as Cleopatra or Gilgamesh, and they lead you towards a domination victory. So it's a dual map, so it's really small and everything like that. They really guide you to a full game with victory, which is a really short game because I'm pretty sure they start you in the lowest difficulty. I didn't see Gilgamesh build much units in general because we played as Cleopatra.
Well, as a tutorial, that's probably one of the only good decisions they made in it from the sounds of what I'm hearing, is that they actually start the enemy on a beginner level. Okay, so you guys did get that. Check. They're going to fire me. They're not going to let me be a game designer after I get through with this rant, I realize. Dang it, I'm sorry in advance. That's a good thing. Now, the advisor being on, I think the advisor is the root of my issue here. I'm trying to think of how to word this since I didn't play the tutorial, not realizing it was a thing. But the advisor, have we ever had a good advisor in Civ? This is a genuine question. Civ 5, horrible in my opinion. Couldn't stand it. So annoying. Always in my ear. Never good advice. I don't know You take a moment.
I think in Civ 4, the advisor was not as annoying, actually. I remember in Civ 3 that I actually liked them. And I believe in Civ 2, you had Elvis as your advisor, which is really cool because it's Elvis.
Oh, Elvis was your advisor?
There was a Civ iteration where Elvis was one of your advisors. I believe the cultural one.
Wow.
So that was kind of cool. In Civ 3, it didn't annoy me that much either. But that might also be because that was the first iteration that I actually played, but I think the longer the series goes on, the worse the advisors actually get. That might be because I'm becoming more familiar with it, but even her, she had never played any Civ games. She was like, I'm new to this game, but I'm getting fed up with this already. This is like super annoying and I just wanted to go away as quickly as possible because I know by now what this is doing and just stop it.
So that there comes the big issue I have with advisors is I don't remember in the beginning of Civ 5 if there was a way to shut the advisor off at the start. I feel like it wasn't very easy for me to get that advisor to stay off. And I think stay off is the important word because you touched on it with this tutorial. Anytime you loaded into it, it came back and reset.
This was not even a tutorial. This was the first full game after the tutorial was done.
Oh.
You still get another pop-up like, are you new to Civilization in general or Civ 6? And since we did the tutorial, I said, just click Civ 6 because we don't want to have everything.
Right.
And still that kept popping up. And every time we loaded that save to continue the full game because we finished that full game as well. It kept coming back with the exact same things that we already heard. So they just reset it itself.
So that's the problem I have, is that these advisors do not play by the rules. I cannot stand that this is Civ 6, this is Civ 5. Anytime that I felt like I got back into the game for whatever reason, those advisors would reset and always be chiming in my ear saying, blah, 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 blah. Advisors, in theory, are a good concept, but they're not executed in a way that I think is useful to a Civ player. And by that, I mean, I think that they're trying to take you in too many different directions. Like, Civ is a game where you kind of have an idea. I'm going here. I don't know how. Well, maybe machine learning with the whole future of, advanced AI stuff. Maybe that is what helps us. But seriously, I don't know. That might assist. But right now, it doesn't know where you're going, where you're trying to go, and how to assist you in getting to that next step. Because I will be building a military unit, and it says, whoa, let's talk about trade routes over here. And I'm like, ah, no, that's not... Sure, tell me that in two turns. I'm not there right now. I'm building a military unit because did you see the barbarian threat over there? No? Thanks, AI.
We had the exact problem you're trying to describe we literally had. We had two cities, and in one of the cities, we wanted to have a builder.
Uh-huh.
But building a builder in that new city was taking too long, so we decided to do it in a capital. It was one turn away from completing, and of course, the tutorial popped up and said, no. We gotta build a campus now. Like, okay, sure, build a campus, but let us finish the builder first. Okay, and then we switched production and said, no, this is really important. You have to build the campus. And we're like, fine, we'll build the campus.
So you switched? You gave in?
No, we had no choice. Oh. It automatically switched back to the campus again.
What?
So you literally, that choice got taken away from you. We had a builder on one turn until being finished, and we had to build the campus first. After that, the library, and then we could finish the builder.
So all that time, your resources went without being improved because you had to do something that you were demanded to do, mandated to do.
Yeah, that's definitely. And that's what I don't. And the tutorial for how thorough it tried to be didn't even explain everything. I'm pretty sure that the cultural victory didn't get any attention at all. I mean, they explained what culture was,
right?
And they explained the civics tree, but I'm pretty sure they didn't touch upon tourism.
Okay, there's a lot of problems with that. First of all, I don't like the idea that it's throwing you to do things that you don't want to do. That's not fair. Yeah, so they take you in the opposite direction. That is a huge problem because they actually taught you to play incorrectly. For someone that would be genuinely new to the game, trying to say, nope, forget about your builder, we know better. Because if you're truly a new Civ player, please don't take your... if you're a brand new Civ player today and you're listening to this podcast for some reason, just go watch YouTube. Don't play that. It doesn't sound good.
Definitely.
Because what it's telling
people... Go watch Let's Plays. You learn so much more from it. And it's usually fun to watch as well. And you just get so much more feel for it.
Because they're actually teaching you to play incorrectly. Now, I know that hopefully someone that has some idea of what they're doing says, wow, you really screwed me by taking away my choice to complete this unit that would have actually helped way more to have them now than in 15 turns when my campus and library are done. But for someone that's totally new to the game and has no real concept of it yet, you may be reinforcing a bad idea that's like, oh, well, this campus is clearly more important than me building the unit that I wanted to build, so I better get that done right away. Even in my games where I have full autonomy, you've taught me that I can just put things onto the back burner. That's not good. And I guess follow-up question, which is, speaking of Let's Plays, is there a need for any of these tutorial sort of things, Valter? What's your stance on that, having just done it?
Well, the problem is that I think that new players that just buy the game on that they check Steam and see something interesting and say, "Oh, this looks interesting. I'm going to buy Civ 6 because I like strategy games. I like these type of game. It looks good. It's a fully fleshed game, stuff like that. Let's go buy it. I'm pretty sure they would rather open the tutorial than look at a Let's Play on YouTube, for example. I think the smaller part of the crowd is actually going for the Let's Plays first if they want to buy the game, just to check it out. And not everybody does that. And therefore, I mean, there are many tutorials about Civ 6 found on YouTube, I'm sure.
Right.
There have not been enough people who've actually been... like making videos like how to play the game. But I don't think those people that buy it off Steam by just looking through Steam, they are not going to look for those videos. They are going to play the tutorial and try to figure it out on their own. Besides that, maybe they will visit the Reddit if they're actually being like really proactive at it. But I think looking for a tutorial Let's Play is not that high on most people's mind.
Okay, random spitball idea. And Bob at Firaxis, who does tutorials, is going to be really angry with me. Since Firaxis seems to put little effort, no offense, guys, but little effort into these tutorials and advisors, they just don't come, even if it's a ton of effort, they don't come out polished. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news. Yeah. What about instead partnering with one of the many awesome YouTubers that are out there to get them to build a baked-in tutorial that could actually just, these videos could be housed within the game itself, if they so choose, or linking them out. But get, and it doesn't have to be like, oh, you know, this YouTuber's traditional video style. It could be whatever Firaxis really wants it to be. But even if it's almost some sort of like play-along sort of thing where you're playing with, I don't know, I watch a lot of Quill 18, but like, what if you partner with Quill and he makes you a 6-episode series or something that's baked into the game, and it's someone that the community knows, that they like, that knows exactly how to talk to these people. It's not like, hey, I'm a game dev trying to speak to you about the policies slots that I just created that are more mechanical than you, brand new player who we're trying to onboard. But I mean, you have these great partner tools, and Firaxis clearly does reach out to them to send cool packages to in the mail and all kinds of stuff, and invite them to do these press opportunities. But that could be an interesting way to get a person on board. I mean, YouTubers are already getting more and more into the money side of things, so it's not like you couldn't independent contractor them to do something like that. But that could be beneficial for everybody.
I think so, actually.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said,
make it kind of an interactive video or something like that, where he literally plays, but you have to play with him and help him out and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so something in that kind of direction where I like Quill 18 as well. I've watched a lot of his stuff, and he actually gets tweeted out whenever he streams by Firaxis official Twitter, for example.
Right.
So of course the he's already relatively close to them, so that could definitely be a thing, and I think that would make a much better tutorial than what they have right now.
And to be honest, Firaxis, it would save you flack, because at the same time that you are building a stronger relationship with your partner and therefore showing the community that you're listening, you also haven't wasted resources on a thing that doesn't get much attention. Like, you would actually get press out of that, Firaxis, because like Kotaku and Polygon and all those are going to talk about your partnership. So you're going to get, right now a tutorial is a dead thing that's in a closet and we ignore it. Like, you hope it helps somebody, but it doesn't get you anything, any notoriety. Anything you get off of it's going to be bad news, because people are going to find issues. To be honest, when you were talking, when you're setting this conversation up, Wouter, about the tutorial, I typed in Civ 6 tutorial. One of the second, third Google search results was Civ 6 tutorial bug. So
yeah, there are a lot of bugs in there.
See, you wouldn't have to deal with that.
The patches made it worse, and
Please talk about that in a minute. I want to hear how these made it worse, because you did tease that.
Yeah. So do you want me to talk about
it? Sure, go for it. Do it. Okay. I didn't mean to cut off your thought, but I did. I'm bad at that.
So the thing is, like, they throw some certain information. Like, I'm not sure exact things in there anymore, but I was like, this is not how it works in the game anymore. I've seen this change literally. And There are more bugs like that. For example, they make sure that you have a scout for scouting around and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, we couldn't move one of our scouts because they were saying, like, you have to move your scout, and directing us to the other scout that already had moved, because we got a second scout as well, which then couldn't do what a scout is supposed to do, move around the map. And those kinds of bugs. But there were some types of information in there, and I unfortunately don't remember specifically what it was, but that was literally outdated. It's like, no, this has changed now. And they clearly didn't update the tutorial, or if they did, not thoroughly enough.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Huh. So that's something. So it sounds like the tutorial itself can't actually handle your individuality in a way. Having two scouts is like, through it for a loop, it would seem.
Yeah, and because we got both scouts through Goody Hot. The first one was 100% on purpose. Like, it was rigged that you would get a scout out of that. I'm pretty sure of that. The second one probably wasn't. That was just a luck of a draw. And the game really didn't handle that well. They still considered, like, you got a scout from the Goody Hot, so that's probably, like, the same kind of thing. And because we now had two, it just went weird.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like, I mean, that sounds like an awful entry experience, which is not what you want for someone that just picked up your game, still has time to return it on Steam. You don't want to get them into a tutorial that's bugged and glitchy. So that doesn't sound good. And you're talking outdated information now, too. Was there anything that came to mind with the patches have changed?
I tried to remember what exactly it was, because I think I saw like two or three examples of it, but just can't remember, unfortunately. I should have written it down when we were playing it, but we were just venting so much to each other at that point as well, because he was being annoyed as well by these stupid things and everything like that.
But see, that's annoyed. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that, like you said, it definitely, the tutorial is playable within the 2 hours. You finish a complete game, you actually win a domination victory, and after that, you're like, yeah, if this is the game, this is not for me. I'm going to return it now.
And then that's just bad news for all of us because, yeah, for obvious reasons.
Because they literally lost a sale because of that.
Yeah. So instead, so this idea that we're just spitballing here, a YouTube partnership, that would have implications that, again, when the new expansion comes out, I think new patches would be your biggest threat because patches come out fairly regularly. New expansions, not so much. New expansion, you just recontract that person to make a couple videos highlighting, like, what? You have three selling points on your expansion, probably. They highlight those three in, like, a three-part video series. But, the patches would probably be some of the harder things to keep up with, depending on how that goes, just because the patches are very important, but at the same time, they're frequent enough that it is probably hard to keep up with that. And admittedly, I understand why Firaxis wouldn't be devoting resources to having someone update the tutorial to say, oh, you know, our harbors now have the ability to give you only one trade route between a harbor and a commercial hub, not two. I get it. But that's a big change. If you're doing trade routes, that's a massive change in the game, but not big enough that you would want to spend money on updating a tutorial. So I don't know what the happy medium to that is.
I think they kind of do owe us to do that, though, even though they might not want to.
Sure.
But they are shipping the tutorial with the game.
Yeah.
And therefore, it is an integral part of the game. And if they didn't want to spend any effort on keeping it up to date, they shouldn't have had it in the first place. They should have done something different.
That's what I'm wondering. Why do we have it? I get it.
Well, but if you're not going to take care of it. I get that it is there. Exactly. So I feel they are responsible of taking care of the tutorial and keep it up to date with every patch they do.
Right.
They do a lot of work on it, but just make somebody go over the tutorial, because it's not a long tutorial, write down literally everything that is wrong. I mean, this could be pretty much done in a day's work for, like, making sure that what is not up to date and what is. You can do that by Q&A people. They have those.
Right.
And then you can fix the tutorial, which shouldn't be that much of an effort, because even though patches are really important, the changes aren't usually that humongous that a complete tutorial has to be rewritten. I think this is definitely within the scope of you should be spending the small amount of effort to this that it takes. Because if you have a Q&A team who tests a whole new DLC or stuff like that, you can also spare that, let's say, a week maximum on actually working a tutorial as well. And I think a week is a lot of time already. I don't think it has to take that long.
I would agree with that. Well, Valter, we are hitting our last couple minutes here. Any further thoughts you have on the tutorial side of things? I think that was that could have been a whole. I should have maybe devoted a little bit more time to that anyway. But anything else you want to add?
No, I think I've. What I want to add is, even though besides the tutorial was horrible, And the first game that we played, we had that advisor keep popping up that you can't, like, easily dismiss. You have to always, like, okay, fine, I heard what you said, now shut up. She's still hooked on the game. She really loves the game. So even through all these bad experiences, still a new Civ player.
Yay!
So ending on a positive note.
That's good. So look, you brought a new player into the fray. Firaxis owes you for that one. Send Valter something. Send him a hat. He likes his hats.
I do like hats. If you have a cool cap, that I would love one, Frax.
Please, please, and thank you. So yeah, I think that was a great conversation. It makes me think what we could do, thinking a little outside the box going forward about it. Maybe that's what we do for one of our 1 year. Let's do that for a 1 year anniversary of the game, Wouter. We should do a kind of an outside looking in of Civ 6, and it could be multi-part. It could be whatever we want to do. If we want to do a topic a week or something, but kind of getting outside of the actual gameplay itself and maybe looking at the game from afar and saying, like, here is what are your experiences just going into it? And obviously I'm just, again, spitballing this whole idea, but yeah. What areas of this whole game mechanism, like from launch to first game, like what is good, what is bad, what needs rehashing? I mean, the tutorial is something I didn't even really realize was there. I mean, have we played scenarios, period? Like, there are so many questions.
I mean, the game
I
is out
now
for almost a year, and this is literally the first time this week that I actually played a tutorial, which is interesting, right?
Yeah. So, okay, here's a call to everyone out there. You guys are doing a great job using the subreddit, and I want to call out a great new topic that someone presented in just a second. But for next week and the coming, let's say the coming month, leading up, submit them early so we can do this leading up to the Civ 6 one-year anniversary. But on the subreddit, it's civcast.reddit.com. Post your thoughts, your whole experience with Civ 6. What do you think is lacking or should be changed? Topics you want us to dive into? Because Zero Art Your Zero wrote on our subreddit, and I'm going to just summarize this really quickly because I will talk about it in detail. But basically, the post goes like this, that he's a Civ player from the beginning, played every single iteration, has about 300 hours in Civ 6, over 1,000 in Civ 5, wanted us to talk about how the immersion is gone for this person because agendas are really, really lacking. They call them flat, kind of like we kept calling these flat in the last game, but it's a great way to put it. It just agendas flat. They're not dynamic in the way that they want to see them. They don't really act human-like. I like this one. They call them robots on rails because every time you see Teddy, and it's always the same Teddy experience. Yes, the secondary agenda is always semi-randomized. Like, I don't even notice the second agenda at this point. I don't care. But the primary agenda is so static that you know what you're getting into every time you go up against them. So that's the sort of stuff I want to look at. Like, but tell us, what is lacking? I mean, are you having an issue larger scale? Like, do you find that some of the graphic settings are just not where they should be for a game like this? And I don't mean, like, I can't crank out enough FPS, but, like, is there something you find is really missing? I mean, Valtteri, I was telling you I was playing Minecraft, and I'm bummed that you can't even do full screen borderless in Minecraft after however many years that game's been on the market. Like, that's the sort of stuff. Yeah. Just top down, what did you find that's weird about Civ 6? Weird or complimentary? What's good? What's bad? What's ugly? I think we could get into some interesting topics hitting that 1 year mark. So, Valtteri, I'm not rambling as much. Do you want to take away with a strategy session?
Yes, because today we are talking about John Curtin of Australia.
Ooh.
And I really like John Curtin because he is really good. Let's start off with the Outback Station. Probably my favorite unique tile improvement in the game. It's really, really good. You get +1 food and +1 production in general on the tile that you place the Outback Station, and +1 food for each adjacent pasture. Additional food and production as you advance through the technology and civic tree for adjacent outback stations and pastures. The drawback is they can only be built in desert, desert hills, grassland, and plain tiles. Well, we have a lot of those always in any part of the game. So they're really, really good. The +1 food and +1 production by itself is already better than a farm in most cases. Unless you start to get feudalism, then you can make the so-called triangles where you get extra food out of it. But you can now do that with the Outback Stations as well and actually get a bigger bonus out of it as well. So the Outback Station itself is a really, really powerful, unique improvement to Australia. That makes Australia already really good and like a really high-tier civilization just by that ability. But they also have the land down under, and I personally love this probably the most out of Australia. It gives +3 housing in coastal cities. And what it does, it mean is that normally you will get less housing in coastal cities because it doesn't have fresh water unless you settle on a river. But now, even if there's no river, all of a sudden your coastal cities will start with enough housing to last them for quite a long time. And this makes expansion for you so much easier. And especially now that harvest became a lot more important in the game, this became much more powerful as well, because you want to have a lot of cities all of a sudden that are in the coast, which normally would be like, I kind of want a city there, but it's probably not going to be that good. It's going to be running out of housing so soon, so I need to build an aqueduct and a granary and a neighborhood, and it's just too much effort. But with this, it's actually becoming really good. Beyond that, it also triggers a culture bomb every time you build a pasture. And a culture bomb means you start stealing tiles. Mm-hmm. And stealing tiles is awesome. It's the only way that you can actually start stealing tiles from your enemies, your neighbors, by just building a pasture. And Poland has that ability, but beyond that, nobody else can do that. And it can be really, really powerful to steal away those precious tiles that it worked hard to get. Holy sites, theater squares, commercial hubs, and campuses will also have higher yields, +1 if you have the charming appeal, and +3 in breathtaking. I mean, all in all, this keeps stacking up to more and more awesomeness, because having just extra yield because you have a charming appeal, which is not that difficult to get, is great. Extra yield is always good. Breathtaking, +3, that's huge. That means that all of a sudden the Eiffel Tower is an amazing wonder for Australia, because it will make all your tiles 2 levels higher of appeal level. And all of a sudden you can gain a lot of extra like yield bonuses out of pretty much all your important districts. Well, of course, Australia isn't one of the best civilizations just because all of this. They also have the Digga.
The Digga. Oh, we have Dan Digga here to say. Oh, we have to talk about that in a second. Go ahead.
This is a unique unit for Australia. Replaces the infantry. It has +10 combat strength when fighting on coastal tiles. And since you're probably having a lot of cities on coastal tiles, that's awesome. But another +5 combat strength when fighting on neutral or foreign territory. That makes assaulting anybody on the coast or just moving units past the coast for them really powerful. All of a sudden, you're super powerful unit you have there. Digga is a really good unit. And you have the Citadel of Civilization. +100% production if either they have received a declaration of war in the past 10 turns or if they liberated the city in the past 20 turns. Well, getting a declaration of war declared upon you, we've all noticed that isn't that difficult in this game. People are always complaining that the AI is too aggressive towards them, and getting 100% extra production out of it is really powerful. Say you're trying to win the space race game and you're lacking a little bit behind, start denouncing some of your biggest enemy and just pissing him off massively. He'll probably declare war on you relatively soon, and there you have a 100% boost to your production, with which you probably can win the space race then while you're defending against that, well, that guy that you just started invading you. All in all, I think John Curtin is one of the most powerful leaders in this game so far, and I really, really, really
Valter, thank you very much for that. I have to ask, wait, so earlier in that you said do you get the feudalism bonus for the outback stations? Is that what you were saying?
No, just for the farms. But because you get also the adjacency bonus for the outback stations with technology, they still are better in my opinion.
Oh, that's okay. Right. Because their fences go together. God, yeah, I like that feature most of all.
It physically, like on the map, it looks beautiful as well, which is an added bonus. But mechanics wise, it's really good. But like looks wise, it makes it just more better.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Oh, good. I mean, I love Australia. I need to play as them more often. That's my takeaway from this, because I haven't played them in forever. Okay.
Oh, yeah. They're really fun to play.
I need to do that. You're convincing me, Valter. So very happy news. You mentioned with Digga, the man we're missing who always yells Digga, had some very, very exciting news for us this Monday. Did you see the picture, Valter?
I didn't. Oh, did he send it?
You didn't see the picture. It was on his Instagram. Dan and his wife
had
a baby boy on Monday. This was September 18th. So huge, 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 huge congrats to those two. Dan and Lindsay, you guys are awesome. And it looks like everything is going very, very well there. So I'll get you a link if you don't have one, Valter, right after the show. But again, huge, huge awesomeness to Dan. We're so, so very excited for you two. We miss you dearly, but you guys are up to some cool stuff. So I'm sure fun times ahead and no sleep for them. Probably the least sleep Dan's had this week, I would guess, since the launch of Civ 6. Let's put it that way. So again, thank you, Valter, for that awesome little strategy session. Love Australia. I want to get back into it. What else do we have for you guys? So you can find all the awesomeness over at our subreddit. Like I said, that is civcast.reddit.com. The website is civcastpodcast.com. You'll find all your links there to everything, including that subreddit link. But more importantly, you'll find links to iTunes and the Android store to get the episodes and blah, 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 all that good stuff. Join our Discord family. We've got some cool people that like to share photos of their Civ stuff. Resenders always there posting cool things. So come join the family. We would like to welcome you in. Reminder that we're not doing anything over on Twitter. Sometimes I see some follows over there. I feel bad, but that Twitter account's a little deactivated, but I wanted to let you guys know again, short reminder. But a huge thank you to everyone that supports us on Patreon. You guys are what makes the Twitch thing happen. We love doing it. We love live streaming. It's just really fun. So if you'd like to help us out even further, it is patreon.com/civcast. We're very, very close to the goal of me going back and playing all the retro Civ games, live streaming those so you guys can be in the chat and active with it. It would be a lot of fun. So again, all the links you will need are civcastpodcast.com. Big thanks to our friends over at Non-Toxic Gaming for making the internet a better place to game. And that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next week to wrap up the CivCast Challenge for September. Like Valter said, oh my goodness, we're already entering October. You can look forward to Valter's strategy session extra thing that goes up on Patreon soon. I'm going to be doing something. It might be related to the Aztecs unless it blows up in my face because Kyle hasn't studied Aztec history in too long, apparently, for his own good. So cross your fingers. But again, that's probably it for this week. So until next week, everyone, just one more turn. You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. For more shows like this, visit kyledempsterstudios.com.